It's time for Podcast Series 5, Episode 13. Talks Radar.
This one's late, isn't it?
It is late.
So, many apologies for that. Also, so,
have we started recording?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Do you want this to be it? Do you want to start again?
I don't know. I just normally try and...
Okay, let's start again.
No, let's start again. This... Oh, no.
We've started that.
We've started it with, and it's almost pub time, so we need to rattle through this. What were you about to say, Graham? Sorry?
I was going to say that I'm going to be away in 2 weeks' time as well. So I was actually going to suggest doing another podcast, like a summer special podcast next week.
Mon Dieu!
No. Just so people don't feel shortchanged when this one's only 25 minutes.
Yeah. Again, sorry. Sorry about that. We've been in a very, very long meeting.
Yes.
The best kind of meeting.
It was called Strategy for the Year 2014, so you could imagine what that's like.
Featuring Project Cyclone.
Project Cyclone. You're not supposed to mention Project Cyclone.
Oh, no. The rule of Project Cyclone. You've broken it. I'm going to get Edward Norton to go around to your house and kick seven shades out of you.
Will it be Edward Norton or me?
Find out next time on Tux Radar Podcast. It's, so that's the intro done. People, I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Graham Morrison.
We're breaking all tradition.
No. Oh, you're very polite. I'm Chris Thornett.
I'm Ben Everard.
And we've just done the audio equivalent of crossing the streams. If you want something...
Is that Ghostbusters?
Yes. But we never do, and we seldom do that in Linux format, which is the print and digital product that we do, and you can pay for that, you can buy copies. It's a lot more professionally produced than this podcast, although that isn't actually saying anything.
No, there's a deliberate mistake in the news section this month.
Let's see if you can find it. We just sent it to the printers yesterday. There's nothing we can do about it. So
just one?
The most obvious one.
Oh dear.
In the 2 seconds it took for you to look at it. So, in this episode, we have various news, we have discoveries, we have a Speak Your Brain.
Two.
We have two Speak Your Brains, that's excellent. The challenge report, which we will get over quite quickly, I imagine, and the open ballot, and a little bit of Creative Commons music. Maybe not. Okay.
Maybe not. That didn't go down very well, did it, anyway?
No.
Even if I was better organised to place it. Let's leave it this episode.
Yeah, you've got another meeting, haven't you? So, intro, people, in this episode, subscribe! Subscribe at tinyurl.com/LXFOffer1. And here's Effie, and we're also available on Google Play and the Kindle. And lots of shiny gadgets that none of us own. Including the iPad.
Right. The biggest bit of Linux news this... what's the word for 3 weeks?
Fortnight. The biggest. It's a blackjack of days.
Yeah. The biggest bit of news this thwart night is the Ubuntu smartphone that they're trying to crowdfund. They're trying to raise $32 million on crowdfunding site Indiegogo to create an all-sing or dancing phone. They'll pretty much do everything, replace your PC, and probably make tea as well. So far, they've raised $7,689,374. Which is quite a lot, but...
And they broke all kinds of records as well in the first 24, 48 hours.
Yeah, fastest ever project to raise $2 million.
Yeah.
Probably some other stuff as well. And they've got 21 days left. We won't speculate on how likely that is just now, because we have that later on in the podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Yes. Can we speculate... Can we talk about the quality of what we think... of the edge, or are we better off leaving all of it to the end?
Should we speculate on the quality?
Yeah.
Speculate on the quality, Andrew.
It looks pretty.
Yeah.
I like the edges.
Andrew has actually held one.
I held it in my very mortal hand.
Was it the same phone?
Probably, because I think there are only two. Oh. So there's a 50% chance that I held the $32 million... Oh, sorry, the $16 million phone.
You didn't drop it.
I didn't. Even though my paws were greasy from Denny's teriyaki burger.
So you've both used the phone and used the OS on this. Was it? Did they
have. No, they didn't. They had some. They had the OS running on a Samsung or HTC thingy. But I really, really like the OS. Not convinced as yet by the phone, but that's because it was just a case.
It was beautifully done.
I'm
incredibly impressed that a company like Canonical, never having done anything like this before, can make such a beautiful job of the design. So it was just an empty prototype that, Andrew and I were at OzCon in Portland last week, and they happened to be, I think, for Mark Shuttleworth's keynote speech. Alan Pope, actually, I don't think he'll mind me saying that, flew over the prototypes from London to the OzCon conference so that Mark could hold one in the keynote. They've done a really good job. It's a good size. It's got it's got that distinctive wedge shape that you see in the prototype designs on the Indiegogo, and right up there, really, I think, with the HTC One for me.
But I'm not surprised by the quality of design at all. I think design is something that Canonical gets right. They get how important it is as well. The design cats that I spoke to in London were smart cats, really smart cats. And one of them had those thick, chunky rimmed specs on that all designers have to wear.
I don't.
He said he didn't.
Well, the only reason I'm not a good designer is
was their handwriting perfect Helvetica.
I guess it's difficult when we're talking about it in the open ballot, but I mean, the big question that is utterly unresolved is what are their intentions for this Indiegogo campaign? Because I can't think for a second that they'd have imagined they'd get $32 million. I just can't see it. It's such an ambitious target. Even with their incredible success over the first week or the first 48 hours and continued success, I mean, that's thousands and thousands of units have been pledged through Indiegogo. You know, ordinarily, if you'd set the target at, I don't know, 20 million might even be feasible, that's still an incredible amount. They may be able to fund it, but it's not going to happen. So I don't know. We don't have any of the answers. Whether this is to raise awareness of the latent demand in a product like this and to try and get other manufacturers on board, or whether it helps Canonical's negotiations with telcos, I don't know. I really hope they do. They won't. I don't think they'll make it because, you know, looking at all of the trend graphs and everything, I don't think they can afford to sell it for any less than the, you know, those. I don't know how they'd afford to actually be able to make it for $600 anyway, or $625. But all the trend charts show that they won't make it, so they probably won't make it. But, you know, I really wish that they could. I really hope that something comes of this.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like it's an interesting idea as well, the fact that you can replace a portable computer with just your phone.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I don't know if it would work until I had one to see how it fitted into my life.
And I don't get it. I mean, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
I have screens anymore to plug things into. You know, I've got a laptop or a tablet. I don't have a keyboard and a mouse lying around.
Well, I see this as a first step down the road. Imagine in sort of 5 years' time, if most screens have some form of wireless display thing. So if you go to a hotel, your telly there has a wireless display. All you do is turn your phone on to grab the TV, pull out your Bluetooth keyboard, and you've got a computer there.
Mm.
I see it as a step down to that road rather than an end in itself. Obviously, it's a long way
away. I don't know. No, I don't get it. I think I get it as a really powerful... I mean, the Ubuntu's operating system, the phone operating system, looks fantastic. I'd love to play with that on a powerful piece of hardware. It's equally dual boots to Android, which is another great OS. So as a powerful smartphone platform, it's great. Good enough for me. I don't worry about the whatever they're calling the PC component bit.
Okay, so... moving on, we've got a very surprising piece of news next. Linus has been in an argument on the internet. Whoa. I'll leave you for a second to take that in. This particular argument is about whether or not you should be allowed to argue on the internet. It's a meta argument, if you will. This is a sort of argument that the NSA would be allowed to collect.
Should we email Theresa May and ask her what she thinks?
Yeah. Should GCHQ collect meta arguments or all arguments?
Awesome win. So the crux of this then is that somebody is offended by swearing on the internet and would like there to be less swearing on the internet.
Yeah, basically she thinks Linux development should be handled in a more professional manner.
This is a kernel developer.
Yeah.
So somebody who's familiar with the kernel development mailing list and the language thereon.
Yeah, I mean, basically she's been doing it for a while and I don't know exactly what it was, but something's tipped her over the edge and she thought, hang on a minute. Should we really be doing it this way? Is this an acceptable way to run what is a massive, massive international project with huge organisations involved, and it's run by a shouty man from Finland? Basically. And Linus has just turned around and said, yes, it should be run by a shouty man from Finland. In fact, the fact that it's run by a shouty man from Finland is what's made it so good. And the crux of his argument was that he and a lot of people get just as annoyed by so-called professional behaviour as other people claim to get by shouty behaviour.
He called it passive-aggressive, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, business speak, the kind of business speak that we've just spent over an hour and a half sitting through.
Yeah. And I can see both sides of the argument. A lot of developers have come out in favour of Sarah, a lot of people have come out in favour of Linus. You know, everyone's got their own opinions on Linus isn't going to change.
No.
And it has given every news outlet a chance to put a picture of Linus in what I call the NVIDIA pose.
Hey, we should do another Linux format t-shirt, shouldn't we, so we can get the rights to that.
We should have asked him to pose like that last year.
Did he not, just when you got your iPhone out?
He did, nearly. He did. Yeah, he threatened to throw us out.
And yeah, the most impressive thing about it all is this big email that went around the kernel mailing list was all written on his phone.
On Linus's?
Yeah. Wrote it 2 pages of A4, tapped out on his phone.
What a man.
Yeah.
There was some other stuff that Sarah published part of a private email he'd sent to her.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have, like everyone, I suppose, have got an opinion on it, you know, and I think we don't act like that because we rely on the listeners. They're our customers and, you know, we've got to be nice and professional. Otherwise, I think we'd have fewer listeners and fewer readers. But, you know,
I think there's a few.
I think that's how I feel about it. But yeah. That's not what I think about the Linux kernel. I think it's a result. It comes down to results.
And I think there's a few things. One of it is, he is fair. He doesn't pick on people. He doesn't, you know, doesn't discriminate in any way. He's just shouty. If you do something, if you do something bad, doesn't matter who you are, he'll call you on it. If you do something good, it'll go in the kernel. He's not using it to bully people into anything. He's not using it to discriminate.
No, I wasn't saying that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think a few people have taken it that way, and I don't think that's fair. And I think, like you say, you have to take it on results.
Well, Andrew looked like he was disagreeing with me then. Do you think we'd be more successful as a magazine and as a podcast if we were a bit more like that? A bit more like, well, Lug Radio Live used to be a lot like that.
Professionalism is quite vague. I think we are professionalism in our honesty. I mean, some might say that it isn't professional to sit here and talk about the 1.5 hour nonsense meeting that we've just had.
True.
But that our honesty about that, I think, is a manifestation of the respect in which we hold the listener and the reader, and we don't shy away from it. If a bad decision has been made, like, I don't know, digital only subscriptions, for example, we get letters about this all the time saying, why can't I subscribe? And it would get a bit tedious to print them every time we get them. Yeah. But every so often we do print one of them because it's worth, people deserve an explanation. It's a valid point. And if someone were to come along and say to me, you know, it's unprofessional of you to publish this letter, and your response criticizing future publishing, then I would have to disagree, because I think it's a form of professionalism to engage with our company's failings. Yeah. So professionalism has many faces and wears many masks.
But if we were to talk and act like Linus Torvalds does sometimes on the Linux kernel mailing list, I mean, in the way that he doesn't suffer fools gladly, I mean, in really quite direct terms, if he thinks a patch is a load of rubbish, then, you know, I sometimes feel sorry for the poor people who are involved in those kind of exchanges with him. And if it was me, or if you're a sensitive type, you know, you go away thinking, I never want to be involved with that community again.
But the kernel is absolutely critical software. Yes. It's the criticalest of critical software. You cannot be pushing bad patches in. And if people try and put bad patches into it, they should be called out, because it is going to be...
Yeah, but then should he be a little bit more touchy-feely or a little bit more considerate about people's feelings, even though the patch is a big pile of crap?
it depends how many patches he's getting submitted. If people are only submitting one or two lines of code a day to him, then yeah, he has to take people's feelings into consideration and foster a sense of good relations. If people are dumping line after line after line and thousands and millions of lines on him every day, then he can afford to weed people out who can't take the criticism.
And the ones he really slams are when people dump large quantities of rubbish code on him.
Fine. Yeah. Absolutely fine.
Do you know what I think we've got here? Is a really good open ballot question.
It's a shame we've...
Well, we can do one next week.
If we do one next week.
I think the thing you're actually missing out on is the fact that he did all this wearing a bathrobe. So I feel like this is an opportunity for us to instigate possibly bathrobe day in the office.
Well, you see, Linus's office is above his garage. He doesn't have to.
But professionalism takes many forms.
I haven't washed mine for about 2 years. So I don't want to see it.
Oh, they just take so long to dry, don't they?
What's the point of washing it anyway?
You're clean when you put it on.
I feel bathrobe day could get a bit risque on the cycle in.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Oh. Yeah, it could go horribly wrong, couldn't it? Oh dear, HR.
But good idea, though. Yeah.
Well, you could go for smoking jackets, that would be right.
Yes. Yes, sold to that man there.
And our final piece of news for the Thwart Night is... it's a horrible word, isn't it? Is the H, the internet news outlet, is closing. They can't make it profitable. Which is unfortunate, because that's where I always get my news from.
It is big news. In fact, everybody last week was talking about, quite a few people I met last week were talking about it. It obviously becomes such an essential resource, and I think it says a lot about the digital economy. Everybody's striving to move to digital, and there is no decent model in terms of monetizing what is great content, and it's a struggle. It's a struggle for all of us, and you know, the H was a really good site in terms of making news palatable and easy to digest and easy to get through. I don't know. Maybe they've gone on to do better things.
And that's the news.
Awesome. As we're trying to make this one a quicker podcast than normal, I'll go straight on to discovery of the week. Have you guys discovered anything? I've got quite a good one.
You go first then.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, you know, there's been a trend for kind of distraction-free text editors. Writers get all kind of excited about it, and I don't really think of myself as a writer, but I do quite a bit of writing. So I've been trying a few different editors recently, mainly because I was travelling and wanted something for my laptop, and I found one that is absolutely brilliant, and it's called Focus Writer. And it's just a text editor written in Qt. And the idea is, like all distraction-free text editors, is that you run it full screen and you see nothing else on your screen. And the editor itself is just a text input thing that has spell checking if you so choose. And so it could be Vim, it could be Emacs or whatever it is. But what I really like about it is that you could drag your mouse to the top and you've got the normal file operations. They all scroll down. Drag your mouse to the bottom, you've got a word count, which is so essential, plus tabs if you've got several documents open. So unlike other distraction-free editors that I've looked at, it's got all of the bells and whistles of a really nice GUI, all just a slide of the mouse away. And in fact, I don't use it full screen. I just use it as a as an application on my desktop. But when I'm typing into it, it has actually helped me focus on writing, and I've really enjoyed using it, and I highly recommend it.
So what you're saying is the GNOME team were right about version 3.
Well, yeah, maybe they're right. And I tell you, Andrew and I spoke to Karen Sandler last week, and she's wonderful. And her kind of attitude towards GTK and GNOME, and it's infectious the way she talks about GNOME 3 and the way that they feel so proud of how they've redesigned the user environment. I don't want to say this, but in comparison to the KDE team and the dealings I have with the KDE team, it felt I wanted to be a part of it. Karen actually made me want to feel a part of the GNOME team and GTK, and you know, maybe I'll look at it. I was thinking of looking more seriously at GNOME, but not for the focus reason, but you know, I love the attitude.
Cool.
I got one, which is not open source related, but I thought it was really good. I discovered that all polar bears are Capricorn. The mating season for polar bears range from April to May, and but the implantation of the sperm, whatever it is, it's a delayed one. It happens in autumn, so the gestation period, well, when the babies, the cubs are born, is in early January. All of them, all polar bears, have exactly the same mating season. Therefore, that makes them Capricorn.
What does that say about their personality?
I don't know, because I haven't read the horoscope.
The horoscopes must be pretty boring, actually. Yeah, yeah. Polar bears.
Go on, you read mine out.
So there you go. I'm not sure whether that happens with other. I had this conversation with Ben yesterday, and we don't know whether it happens with every single species of animals. But it's actually quite amazing that they share the same zodiac sign.
Never thought about it, but yeah, I guess.
But yeah, but why would you?
So many animals must have the same kind of.
There you go. And the other thing is, it's not discovery, but it's something really annoying. It just happened. That lady that I introduced to Linux and installed Mint in her laptop mentioned to me that she wanted LibreOffice installed on it. And I went, yeah, it's already installed on Mint. It just comes as a default on it. And she went, yeah, but it's not the latest version. And I just didn't realize it wasn't the latest version. It was, I don't know, 3.something. And she said, oh, yeah, no, the latest version of LibreOffice is 4. And I went, all right. And I tried to install it using the software center, and the facility is not there. You had to do it by what's called PPA.
PPA, yeah.
And I discovered it right there, and then all the applications have the same problem. And it's truly annoying, because you'd imagine that you will get the latest version on the software center, and you don't. Why?
It's a big problem. It's down to package management. It's down to dependencies, and it's down to, you know, release schedules for distributions.
Well, it's to do with it, because that's a long-term support version. And the way that works is they fix it at a certain point, and they only release security updates.
Yeah.
But in return for that, you get a stable version that's fully tested. If they just updated everything when there was updates, they'd spend the whole time testing everything.
I was just thinking of something like LibreOffice, which is really important to have these sort of compatibilities within the documents between that and other Office suites. It would be really important to have the latest version to keep up to date with a new document of formats. That is why I think it was quite important to have some sort of link on the software center. That is why. I mean, programs like GIMP, for instance, that you have to install by BPA, using BPA, but it doesn't matter, because not everyone is a digital artist. But when you're using a Word editor, then I think you always need the latest version, just for compatibility reasons, really. That is why.
Yeah. Would be nice if there was an easier graphical way of adding the PPAs and stuff for that.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I think there should be a package format really for these applications, because especially when you come from Windows or OS 10, you're just used to downloading, you know, a DMG or an EXE and having the latest version that you just downloaded, rather than having to then. I understand the issues and why it doesn't happen, but it's a problem that we've had for years, for 10 years, for 15 years. It was one of the first things that I couldn't get my head around when I first started using Linux. Why can't I just get the latest version of Firefox? Mm. Oh, I have to either download the RPM separately from somewhere else, or I have to, you know, you jump into Rawhide or whatever distribution you have to be using. And
actually, SUSE do have quite a nice way of doing this in their one-click install.
Yes, that is really good.
Because that can actually add repositories. So yeah. In that way, you could add whatever they call their equivalent of the PPA. I guess it's just another repository in SUSE. And install it in one, just clicking on a website. The Ubuntu one-click install doesn't allow you to add PPAs.
But then, no, and they seem to be moving away from it. And isn't Canonical investing some time to creating like this single package manager to rule them all? I know I've heard it before, but...
But even in Android, you can always install the latest version. It just comes and updates it automatically.
Yeah, that's
true.
I guess everything in Android is like the equivalent of being statically linked, which you know just creates a self-contained folder for your application, which is not what Linux is about. But you know, maybe it's worth it sometimes.
Well, with Android, it works on the API level, which would be actually an interesting way to see if you could do that with Linux, where you chunk everything up in blocks, and then you. Well, actually, they've done a huge amount of work on keeping backwards compatibility as well. But I guess it's the sort of thing that the Linux standard base was designed to address, but that never really worked.
Well, that was my two discoveries.
It's 5-1.
quick!
Aye, aye, aye.
I'll whip through mine quickly. My first discovery is that, you know how the end on a tape measure is always a little bit wobbly? I always thought tape measures were just poorly manufactured, but no. The reason it's a little bit wobbly is so that when you measure the outside, it pulls a little bit. And when you measure the inside, it pushes a little bit, so it compensates, wobbles the exact width of the little pokey outy bit. So there is a reason they're not just poorly manufactured. My more Linuxy discoveries. I've been running a VPS for a while now, sort of looking at stuff to put on it, sort of useful cloud stuff. And one that was, I don't even know how you pronounce it, Codiad, and a CODIAD, and it's an IDE that runs on your server. So at the moment I'm using it for developing some JavaScript stuff, but it means it's always there. If I'm at home, I've got it. If I'm at work, I've got it. If I'm on the go, I can do it. Just log into my server, and I have my coding environment. It has a few little foibles, but it's generally working quite well at the moment. And another thing that I've put on there that works well is, I don't know how to pronounce this either, PIWIK. And it's basically an open source alternative to Google Analytics.
I've heard about that. A couple of people have said they've even moved from Google Analytics to this.
I mean, I've put it on tiny, tiny websites that don't really do anything, but I could feasibly see that working. I mean, because obviously if you're running a big website, you don't want to send all your users' data to Google every time anyone clicks on it, although most people do. It's not ideal. And this allows you to host it yourself. Mm. Brilliant.
My discovery is that SID chips, the sound chip from the Commodore 64, is that right? The analog sound chips that give you a nice, really nice, warm, crunchy sound and that can be had for exorbitant prices on eBay, are highly prized in the world of cryptography because they produce genuinely random numbers and you use that as a source of randomizing stuff when you're doing random things and making... I don't really understand it.
Entropy is the term.
Entropy.
Source of entropy.
Yes, they're a source of entropy to generate random numbers. And I found this out because Mr. Matthew Garrett told me, and he's a super, super smart fella. You know, when you talk to people and you know how you can see it just shining out of them, but they're like oblivious. Because they're just too cool. I'm aware that I'm super duper clever, but you know, there are more important things in life. Like that. Like, yes, I like that. That's my discovery. And you can also use radioactive material as well, but it's harder getting that past IT managers.
Can you use a monkey on a typewriter?
A room of monkeys. In a hurricane.
Would that be actually random, though? Or would you be limited to the number of keys on the typewriter?
It all goes to ones and zeros at the end.
Yes. Probably. I don't know. There's budget restrictions on and you know, European Union import laws on monkeys. Another good reason why we should leave and vote UKIP, so we can all have our own monkeys.
Keep them out.
Okay, thanks for your discoveries. Halfway reminder.
Still to come, a very rushed Speak Your Brain and a challenge report and an open ballot, maybe.
Yeah, there's two Speak Your Brain, so it can't be that rushed. Okay, the first one from Anita. Darren Hale. Okay, they've got a dual email address, Anita and Darren Hale, and it's Darren that's emailed, okay? I wanted to send this for your next Speak Your Brains. I've just posted a piece on one of the forums I'm involved with because I'm sick and tired and I'm embarrassed by some of the aggressive behaviour of some people on forums who think they are clever by attacking others because they use a particular distro or use an older version which works with their particular hardware, especially if they can only upgrade so far and can't afford to upgrade their machine. As someone who works away at their own little distro as an offshoot of the main distro in this particular forum, which shall remain nameless, I find the negative energy of this very bad and it can get you down, which leads me to the following question. What is the purpose of a forum? Am I naive to believe that the purpose of a forum is to help others in a supportive environment and share and grow each other's knowledge without the frankly annoying need to put others down and their choice of distro? It's all Linux, GNU or otherwise. What's their point? So what do you fellas think? To me it's embarrassing. And what newcomers think when they see it? I think that some are terrible ambassadors for Linux and they need to pull their heads in, respect others' points of view, and there is a fine line between healthy debate and the other.
Agree 100%. You should have a look at linuxformat.com/forums.
But there. Isn't it similar to the Linus Torvalds question that we just talked about, really?
Yeah, but those people are putting themselves forward to be belittled by Linus Torvalds by sending him lines of code.
By participating people, in his people asking fraternity.
People asking legitimate questions on a forum, getting, you know, oh, well, you don't belong here because you don't use Gen 2 or whatever. You know, that's just moronic.
Yeah, I think that we had a conversation yesterday. I was... regarding whether the Linux and the open source communities is an elitist type of group or not. And I think I mentioned yesterday about I saw a video of Nixie Pixel, who's a reporter about open source in the States, who was virtually attacked by another fellow open source user and so on, so on in a conference for the sake of what the way that she dressed or the way that she reported about open source and Linux. And basically they told her that she didn't belong to this sort of group. And yeah. It is that sort of attitude that I think is just reprobable. Really, I don't really like it either.
Another Speak Your Brains from Remy Van Elst. I don't know if this is the right way to spend Speak Your Brains, but since you're on the podcast and your emails list in the magazine, I thought I'd try it. Yes, it's the right email address. In the most recent episode, Prison Architect is covered. I think it was in the last issue of the magazine, yes, as well. This guy's from the Netherlands. I generally like sim games, so I thought let's give it a try. Kicked in for the cheapo option of $10 and started playing. 5 hours later, my wife came back from work. It was my day off. Finding me and the house in exactly the same conditions as when she left for work, except for my prison housing housing. 63 over 58 prisoners. I think that means it's, you know, over capacity. Having two workshops, two canteens, three cell blocks and a high security block. Later, I've kicked another $50 to them to get my name in there as a prisoner. Awesome. And after that day, my playing has gone to a more normal level, both because life continues even with nice games and because the game gets unbearably slow with so many prisoners. And when you cut off a water pipe, every toilet and things connected to that water pipe gets a flashing drop. My little laptop doesn't like that either. Performance drops badly, but hey, it's an alpha, and except for that one point, it's a very good alpha. Cheers, Remy. That's great. Prison Architect is a fantastic game. It's a really good game. Thanks for the Speak Your Brains. If you want to speak your brains next week, email me. It's graham.morrison@futurenet.com.
Brings us now to the challenge report. I think we should skip this, really, and come back to it in more depth next week.
Yeah, okay, good point. I concur.
Yeah. How much more time do we have, Graham?
We've got about 7 minutes.
That's plenty of time for an open ballot. The open ballot, the subject this Thwart night is the Ubuntu Edge. I can't remember the exact question because whenever I copy and paste it, if I copy and paste the question, then I copy and paste an advert in and that just OpenOffice doesn't like that.
I think it was do you think they're going to make it?
So, Lager Monster says, I don't think, this is the target was $32 million. This is what we discussed in the news earlier. Lager Monster says, I don't think Mark Shuttleworth intends to reach the goal. Mm. All he intends to do is gauge if it is worth going to the next step. I am not sure what their set limit is, but if they, for instance, reach $15 million, they will at least know there will be a chance of success and will proceed to the next Ubuntu-funded step. Taking our money is not the goal. Gauging popularity and guaranteeing success is.
I can't really disagree with that.
No. And indeed, some of the other people to whom we spoke, shadowy, sinister figures in the underworld, probably funded by Blue Systems, they also could not comment on that. Rothgar says, see yet another anonymous penguins message. Was that?
No.
Oh, no. Yes. Thanks, Rothgar. And thanks, yet another anonymous penguin. Itinerant Cynical Penguin says they have probably had $32 million worth of PR and advertising from the use of crowdfunding. Well, they did get in The Sun.
Did they?
And wow. The Guardian.
Wow.
The Telegraph as well, I think.
Wow.
That is impressive.
It was on the BBC. Wow, that's a very good point.
Mm. Maybe not The Sun. Sultan of Swing says, am I stupid, awesome, or both?
I don't know.
Rakios says, I'm interested in the device, and even if the Ubuntu part never gets anywhere, it still has Android on board. I'm inclined to doubt it will reach its target now. The enthusiast money is in, but it needs mass appeal to go the rest of the way. And with all the cheaper options gone, I'd be surprised if it gets another $25 million. Still, I could be wrong. There are lots of wealthy people interested in a feature-heavy phone running an untried platform.
One of them running a company. It's very similar to Canonical. Oh, it is Canonical.
Mark Shuttleworth, not verified. I'm really sick of Ubuntu. Ubuntu is the new Microsoft.
He didn't mention that in his keynote, did he?
No, he didn't.
He didn't. Would you buy Effie? Would you buy an Ubuntu Edge?
I think I will. My problem with it is that it is about the marketing of the product. So not many people know, a part of the open source and Linux community, not many people know about Ubuntu. So how do you sell a product that is not terribly popular across the planet? That is my problem. But yes, I will buy it. I trust your view on holding that device yourself and telling me that the interface is brilliant, if the functionality is brilliant, hey, you got a computer, supercomputer on your hand, so yeah, I will buy it, definitely. Mm-hmm. Although, I don't like Ubuntu so much on the desktop, I probably will buy the device, yeah.
Well, Chris, you're a big Ubuntu fan now, aren't you?
Well, I use it, yeah, when I get a chance.
So, what do you think of the idea of it running on a phone that also doubles as a 4 gig of RAM, 128 gig of storage PC that fits in your pocket?
I like the idea of it. I think the thing I would say about it is that it's not really about Ubuntu running on the phone. It's actually more about the appeal of the product to high-end users. I think there are lots of iPhone users out there that might be tempted by a phone that's got that kind of a spec, more so than necessarily the fact that it's running Ubuntu, which they probably don't know about. I mean, the fact that it's got Android on it as well, and the fact that you can run Android apps on it is really, quite a critical thing as well, crucial benefit to it. But yeah, I think there's a lot of people out there that would go and look at the spec, although the spec's not confirmed. The details there suggest a phone that's going to be cutting edge, and that'll appeal to a lot of people, I think.
Sadly, it doesn't appeal to Unanimous Penguin.
who says, my sadistic side wants to see them fail miserably. In fact, every side of me wants to see that. Does nobody else see the irony that for the past 18 months, Canonical have been proving they don't care about their community's opinions, and they will do what they want no matter what their users think, and now they expect the same community members to stump up $32 million to fuel much of this ego. I think anyone who pays a complete phone price into this has got more money than sense. There are lots of people like that. More money than sense. Spangwidges says, my kingdom for edit button. Oh no, hang on. Sorry, Spangwidges. My kingdom for an Apple Z that works in real time. A Control Z. Spiegel 66. Yeah. Hope it does meet the target, as competition is always a healthy thing. Best of luck, Ubuntu, with your phone.
Did you say Spiegel or Smeagol?
Spiegels are a kind of river folk. It looks like Spiegel.
No, I do agree with that last comment, because should Google be worried about this new device? That
Google?
Well, with the Nexus, they seem to have top-notch mobile phones and so on and so on. I'm not sure whether iPod should be worried or not, but...
No.
Fine.
It's just that such the completely different scales.
Yes, how many units are they going to make for £32 million?
I did check up how many they've got so far, but I think it's over 10,000. It might be 15,000, I might be completely wrong.
So it doesn't... It's not even in the same...
league.
No, and this is it. The Indiegogo campaign is it. That these are the only edges they're making. They may go back and do another Indiegogo campaign, but it's not going to go on to become a mass-produced phone from Canonical. Okay. It isn't like a prototype.
Well, that's what they say now.
Well, that's what they're saying now, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe them. They'll tweak it a little bit and reduce the amount of solid-state storage, maybe.
Conversation. Disinterested Penguin says, blah blah Ubuntu, blah blah phone, blah. Thanks for your valuable input there. Polyamorous Penguin says, it won't be free software, which makes them just another company peddling restricted goods, so not really interested. Oh, and a bit further down, Lager Monster. Hi again, Lager Monster. Says, I've just slapped down $775, but I'm treating this as a vote for the project, vote for the product, as per my previous post. But Spangwidges could be right, and Mr. Shuttleworth will step in at the end to make up the difference. I will then be a proud owner of the first issue Edge. Actually, that puts a smile on my face. But how am I going to explain it to the missus?
He's already got to explain it, because the money's taken straight out of your account as soon as you made the pledge.
I am Zimbo. This looks amazing, a really desirable product. Just a pity it's a bit out of my price range. Good for Canonical for trying to push boundaries, and from what I've seen, Ubuntu for phones has the potential to become a serious contender in the phone OS world. Good luck, Canonical.
Yeah, I mean, in UK price terms, it's close to £400, whereas the Samsung S4, for example, is closer to £600. Yeah. So it's actually an incredibly good value for a top-notch phone. I think the screen is only 720p. But in terms of CPU and storage, it's a lot better. And supposedly, you know, they haven't said what the CPU platform will be or how many cores it will have. But if it's going to be the cutting edge, as they promise, in a year's time, it'll be powerful.
So all we have to do is basically stop drinking lager and save that money to buy the phone, which it won't work for Lager Monster, because it won't be Lager Monster anymore. See, he does that.
Maybe he could switch to being like Foster's Monster. Rather than Stella Artois Monster.
Special brew, cheap prison.
I think that positive comment from I Am Zimbo and Lager Monster should be where we end this podcast.
Yeah. I wish them the best of luck. And it's nice to see somebody doing
Especially taking a risk.
Coming
up with something that looks genuinely good. How many times have we looked at Android phones and thought, oh yeah, it's got the potential, but it just looks a little bit rubbish or a bit kiddified.
Mm. It feels nice saying something positive about Canonical.
Yes. For so long.
Yeah. Was that negative in saying that?
I was just wondering if next podcast will say something nice about Google.
The Nexus 10 is awesome. Sadly, there's a limit to how much currency you can take out of the US. So we're already going to be so nice. That I think that's all the weather, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for wrapping up, because I've got to go try and do another podcast next week, if people don't mind. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
See you.